This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske.
Tumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping. With folks like me.
Best-selling author in Kansan, Sarah Smarsh, examined poverty and the American dream in her bestseller, Heartland. Now she's back with a tribute to Dolly Parton, Feminism and the Power of Country Music. The book is She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. In it, Smarsh pays homage to music that speaks to women in places where feelings aren't discussed, and she honors Parton for validating women who often go unheard. Sarah Smarsh's Heartland was a finalist for a National Book Award. She's reported for the New York Times and The Guardian. Sarah, welcome back to Up to Date. So nice to have you.
Hey, Steve, I'm always happy to chat with you. Thanks for having me back.
You know, this book is a love song to Dolly. What has her music meant to you over the years?
Well, folks who hear that I wrote a book that's inspired by her life and career might be surprised to know that I didn't grow up as some kind of, you know, Dolly super fan by any means. I did grow up on country music, what I would maybe call old country music at this point, since the genre has changed so much. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid in the 80s, she was just ubiquitous in culture, of course, in movies, on the radio, magazines, talk shows. She was not yet maybe at the icon status that she now holds, but she was just part of the fabric of our lives. And decades later, as an adult, a journalist, a professional who thinks a lot about the intersection of class and gender, I was started to see her in a new light, particularly as she has sort of emerged as a unifying figure in a very divisive climate. And that inspired me to go back and give her another look. And I discovered all these amazing things about her I hadn't known previously. And I thought she's a perfect piece of popular culture to use as a kind of springboard to talking about issues that I care about.
Well, tell us about the power of her music and how her songs have validated women who, as you say, often go unheard.
Well, those women who often go unheard are the women closest to me. They're the women who raised me on a small wheat farm in Kansas, and they worked in factories, and they didn't get a chance to go to college the way that I did. But they're brilliant women, strong women. And because I sort of straddle a class line or a class divide in my life in terms of where I come from and what I do professionally, I'm always sensitive to the sort of barriers to giving credit where it's due, if you will. And in the feminist movement proper, women like my grandmother, say, very rarely get any credit for their contribution to our gender's progress. So an example that pertains to Dolly and why she might articulate that story so well. When I was a kid, I remember rolling down a highway with my grandma once. She was driving, and there was a lot of highway time back then because we lived so far from various sorts of services. Right. And she had a Dolly tape in the tape deck. And Code of Many Colors, which might be, you know, one Dolly's most signature famous song, at least of her kind of genre of songs about back home. That song came on and my grandma started crying. And it, in my memory, at least, that was the first time I'd ever seen my grandma cry. And she certainly had plenty to cry about in from real life. But yet it was Dolly's voice and kind of channeling of deep emotions that have to do with poverty that my grandma understood firsthand, that moved her so much. And that's the power of Dolly Parton, I think, that, that a lot of people would recognize.
You know, you didn't get to talk to her for these articles, to Dolly I'm talking about, for these articles you wrote that, that you've now turned into this book. What happened when you reached out to her?
Well, you know, so this was in back in 2016. It might be good context for your listeners to know that this was originally written in serial form for Country Music Magazine. And so it was 2016, an election year. This magazine had a fellowship for writing about the, you know, some way in which roots music or Americana music relates to broader culture and society. And I wanted to talk about Dolly as a kind of exemplar of working class feminism. So I applied for that gig. I got it. And then I started hounding her management to try to get an interview and to no avail, but there are plenty of resources for researching her and putting together the analysis that I wanted to do, and so that was all fine and good, but I will say that then those ideas kind of made their way into the mainstream through other facets of the media. And now it's kind of come full circle where that original magazine series is now a book. And as it happens, I'm going to the post office later this afternoon to mail a copy to her. So so it all worked out.
Hey, any sense of why she didn't talk to you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm sure that she, is constantly inundated by an impossible number of such requests. As far as why mine was lower on the pecking order, you know, the magazine that I was writing for at the time, you know, I assumed that like 300 people were going to read this. It's a print only magazine called No Depression. It's a very high quality publication, but very niche. And, I'm assuming that her management has, rightly so, kind of picks where the exposure is the highest and most useful. And I didn't make the cut then, but that's okay.
What would you have liked to have asked her, Sarah? I imagine there are a lot of things.
Well, you know, folks have been asking me this lately, and to my mind, you know, the way that I would approach an encounter with her along those lines would be more like a conversation than an interview, with the same objectives, of course, of getting her perspective. But I would like to just kind of run some of my theories past her about why she's made certain decisions in over the course of her career. Decisions, by the way, that for many decades there wasn't really much analysis of. And what I'm getting at here is she very intentionally decided decades ago that she wasn't going to class herself up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She was going to keep presenting as what broader culture would traditionally shame as quote unquote trashy, in the way she speaks, in the way she dresses, in the movie roles she took, and to some extent in the songs that she wrote. And, you know, she's a very smart woman. If she had wanted to follow the more prototypical American class ascension strategy, she would have quote unquote gotten out of the holler and never looked back.
Right.
She might have even hidden where she came from. Now,
so,
of course,
why didn't she? Why didn't she,
well,
Sarah?
So the theory that I share, and this is what I would love to chat with her about sometime, is it's kind of, and this is one of the paradoxes of Dolly Parton, is it's simultaneously a performance and a calculated business decision. She, of course, rose to fame within the country music genre, where it makes perfect sense to some extent, to be talking about where she comes from. But then she was, of course, a huge crossover, and has continued forever, over and over, over the decades, to return to home in the stories that she tells, in the way that she presents herself. And my theory as to why this is the only explanation that could account for the authenticity with which that lands. You know, she's been very rich for like half a century, and there aren't many folks who could pull off that act. And the reason is, it isn't just an act. You know, she knows what she's doing, but it is also very true to herself and who she is. She's still very much of Tennessee, of East Tennessee, and even at the height of fame and fortune, it seems quite real to me that she transcends all of the glitter and wealth to ultimately truly be an abiding country girl who sees herself that way in her deepest heart of hearts.
Well, that's what's so interesting about her, because, you know, most people would agree with you that she has remained true to herself, and yet she is this phenomenally successful businesswoman and cultural icon now. One thing that struck me about her book, things that I'd forgotten about, she knows how to say no, even at a time when it may not have been to her best advantage. She walked away from her relationship, her professional relationship with Porter Wagoner, who was her early partner. She said no to Elvis Presley early on. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, this is like absolutely quintessential Dolly.
Yes.
And it demonstrates, yeah. And it demonstrates, I think, you know, what you were talking about, that sort of business savvy, that it's rooted in integrity, but it's also, you know, she's made some long game plays that made her very rich. And the one that involves Elvis goes like this. She wrote and recorded the song "I Will Always Love You," which a lot of your listeners might recognize more readily by Whitney Houston's cover of that song in 1992.
Right.
But Dolly had written that decades prior, and I believe it had been a number one hit on the country charts. Well, Elvis loved the song. He wanted to record it. And this was, you know, for a young woman, sort of on a rising star like Dolly, that would have been an incredible boon. And particularly as a songwriter, and she's always kind of identified as a writer even before a singer
right.
and performer. She's quite prolific, actually. And so it's this huge honor. And of course, she says yes, and she's over the moon. And then Elvis's management played this kind of cleverly. They waited until the last minute to say, oh, by the way, we're going to need half the publishing rights when we record this. And Dolly had made a promise to herself that being a writer, and I assume this decision was influenced by coming up in a man's world,
right.
that it, where she didn't always get credit where it was due, that she was going to always, no matter what, keep the publishing for the songs that she wrote. And so she was torn up about this turn of events, of course, but and folks were saying to her, are
She's
you crazy
nuts.
It's
yeah.
Elvis,
it's Elvis,
just let him have it, it's Elvis, whatever he wants. And she said, you know, she said, I hate it, but I gotta stay true to this promise to myself. And she said no to Elvis, which took some real chutzpah as a young woman who was nowhere near his, you know, stratosphere of stardom at the time. And the beauty is that then, you know, Whitney Houston records the song with one of the greatest pop performances
right.
of all time
right.
for the Bodyguard soundtrack in the early 90s. And the money for that one, oh boy, did it. It's just like, it's probably still rolling in.
Yeah.
And Dolly has actually made the comment in interviews, Whitney Houston's recording of my song made me so rich that I could buy Graceland.
Sarah Smarsh is my guest. Her new book, She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. And yet, despite all this, Dolly Parton does not consider herself a feminist. Why not?
Well, this really gets to the heart of why I ever wrote this book. So
mm-hmm.
I know a lot of women who are, you know, powerful, strong females who absolutely believe they are equal to men and deserve for that equality to, you know, ring in all of our laws and policies. And yet they're averse to that term. And it is because some political factions have quite successfully weaponized the word itself and sort of misconfigured its actual meaning. So
mm-hmm.
So we've got a lot of folks debating about feminism who actually aren't even defining the term in the same way. But in its original truest form, without being politicized, in just the it representing a philosophy or an intention that all genders should be treated equally, Dolly Parton and these, you know, like-minded women I'm referring to, absolutely embodies the tenets of feminism exquisitely, and in some cases even more perfectly than a woman who is wearing the word on a t-shirt but maybe is falling short of living it in her day-to-day life. And so I, as someone, and this gets back to my sort of having a dual consciousness in class terms, I wanted to, you know, expand the way that we think about what women have been contributing to our march toward equality. And folks like Dolly Parton are absolutely part of that journey, whether they use that term overtly or not.
Well, there's a lot to think about here. That's Sarah Smarsh, her new book, She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. Sarah, it's always great to have you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks a bunch, Steve.
That's it for today. I'm Steve Kraske. We'll be back with more tomorrow from KCUR's Up to Date. You would be surprised to find how